Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark the Liberty, and joining me today is...
Bad joke, Knockreiner.
Unverified Twitter, Knockreiner.
Yeah, I suck. In this case, I'm happy about it.
Exactly.
I especially suck because I had a group try to get me verified once, and Twitter was like, nah, you're not big enough. So it's not from lack of trying.
I'm not one to laugh.
Specifically trying and being... And failing.
Well, congratulations on failing, because it kept you safe from this massive breach that we're about to talk about. Afterwards, we'll hit another advisory on nation-state hacking before talking about a really serious vulnerability that was just patched as a part of Microsoft Patch Tuesday. Before we get any more awful jokes or puns, let's go ahead and roll on in. So I guess we got to start out this week with what I think is the biggest news story. Corey probably disagrees, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I actually think from an actual industry impact, the other one's bigger. But I can totally see how from a pure mass recognition and pop culture standpoint, this will be the bigger one for sure. More, as you mentioned before, our grandmas might hear about this. At least our moms will.
Yes.
The other one, they probably never will hear about. Other than the hacks that happened because of it.
Exactly. So what we're trying to get at here is last Wednesday, at around the middle of the day, Twitter suffered a pretty serious security breach where attackers managed to not necessarily take over, but at least gain control of multiple high-profile accounts, ranging from Elon Musk to Barack Obama to Bill Gates, even Apple's corporate account. Even at one point, Twitter's support account was taken over by this. And the attackers...
And to be a little even more specific, if you're the people out there that are kind of jealous that you don't have that blue verified checkmark on Twitter, it was those accounts which are kind of the most verified and so-called secure of Twitter accounts. So in this case, it might have been nice not to have a blue checkmark because you could have been targeted.
Especially because during the cleanup phase, Twitter disabled tweeting access for any verified account, which was... It was actually kind of funny. At that time, it was like, blue check was hashtag blue check was trending on Twitter, and is everyone saying, oh, all the verified people are gone, time to have a real party. But anyways, the attackers used this access to basically just promote a Bitcoin scam, which was kind of interesting. Every single account had a variation of a similar message where it said, if you send me Bitcoin to this wallet address below, we will double it. And like at the last time I checked yesterday, it was $110,000. I think you mentioned it's probably closer to $180,000 the attackers have made off with in this case.
The wallet's actually pretty easy to find. So if you really want to, you can go look it up.
Yep, we've got them linked off our article on this on secplicity.org also, where we're tracking. I'll do another update after we're done recording this before you listen to this. But around the same time, too, nearly every single major cryptocurrency related account as well, like Binance or CoinDesk, all linked to a fictitious website for some crypto fund relief thing that the website itself was down, which was kind of interesting. Like if you'd have this level of access to this massive takeover of one of the biggest social networking platforms, you'd have your website up and ready to go to handle the volume. But anyways, I digress. As of our recording this, Twitter hasn't released a whole lot of details on exactly what happened here. CEO Jack Dorsey did say that they will be open and transparent as they have more details when they're done with their investigation. But they've basically so far just said, we detected what we believe to be a coordinated social engineering attack by people who successfully targeted some of our employees with access to internal systems and tools. And this is backed up by Twitter's been kind of going through and scrubbing a bunch of tweets and deleting ones that link to screenshots of what appear to be an administrative control panel that the attackers were able to get a hold of. This type of panel is what you'd expect any like God mode access to be for a social networking platform, the ability to ban or unban users. I'm assuming they had the ability to either disable MFA or change email accounts. But it basically enabled the attackers to do whatever they wanted with these high-profile verified accounts. And with whatever they wanted, they did crypto scam.
A side effect is, do know that Twitter employees with certain levels of access could tweet as you.
Yeah, it's a little frightening. So Vice's motherboard also backed up this claim. They had four different sources, anonymous sources from an underground forum with some familiarity to it. Some quotes from their article. There was, "We used a rep that literally had done all the work for us," one of the sources said. Another one said that they paid the Twitter insider. So it seems like social engineering, not in tricking them to do something, but just bribing them to do something. In which case, I have a feeling that there's, I can't imagine that the Twitter employee that gave up this access is going to get off scot-free. There's no way they're not going to be able to track it.
He or she is not going to have a good day.
No.
And this is pure speculation, but I just don't, like, for you to really, this isn't just throwing up your job. This is criminal. I mean, you can get into big trouble for this. I just, based on how these actors, what they did, how kind of organic and ad hoc the entire thing seemed, I can't imagine them paying a lot for this access. And if they did, boy, did they waste it on something crappy. Like, just from a technical standpoint or a business standpoint, if you were going to make only around $200,000, you probably wouldn't want to pay one of your tiny middlemen more than 10%. And I don't know about you, but $18,000, while it could be a lot to a certain employee, this is kind of giving up the path of your life type thing. So it just seems, I don't know if it's true, but I'm kind of surprised that, you know, an insider would succumb to something so simple. That is, unless, and here's where we get into tinfoil hat territory, is the cryptocurrency thing the only thing, or was that maybe a smokescreen?
Yeah, like maybe they were doing something else internally, like stealing off data, and this was just their coup de grace exit strategy to try and hide that. Because, like I've said it before, if you have this level of access to a massive social network platform, why would you just like tweet out a Bitcoin scam for like a few dozen high profile accounts? Like, you could do so much more with it, like even selling that access on to someone else. Like I mentioned, what happens if, like, what if they had waited until November 3rd or whatever, and then tweeted out from Donald Trump's account and said, "Oh, due to health concerns, I'm withdrawing from the presidential race." Like, the chaos you could cause and the amount of money people could potentially pay for that. It's just, only getting $180,000 out of a Bitcoin scam seems dumb.
Although on the flip side, this is two things. One, if this was dependent on an insider, it was probably always a short-term scam. And you got to realize it would be noticed and mitigated quickly. You know, if suddenly one of those big names says there's tweets coming from me that I don't expect, obviously Twitter did move fast to figure out what happened. So whatever you did once you gave it up had to be quick. If you had direct control of the admin tool, maybe it would take them a while to get you out of there persistently based on tools. But again, if it's an insider, they can cut it off much quicker. So I could see how, you know, maybe they knew this was kind of a quick throwaway thing anyways. And that brings me to the second part, we have seen hackers do things for the lulz. You know, it's really silly, but Lulz Group, I think your friends at Lizard Security.
Lizard Squad.
Lizard Squad.
Whatever they are. Careful, you'll paint us a target.
Yeah, they do some pretty stupid things that just bother people and don't make a lot of money. So who knows? I will say, though, but I do think you're right, that this level of access could have done other things. Like, if you pay attention to some of the Reddit groups talking about this, they talked about, I don't know if you'd have enough time to really take advantage of this unless you were quick and stocks move fast. But when you're talking about Gates and Musk and potentially Trump, you know, there's comments, business comments you could make, which could create doubt in stocks, which is, if you had shorted ahead of the time, you probably could have made exponentially more than $180,000 by just being smart about who tweets were coming from and thinking about business things going on. So to your point, they're big names, and there's other ways to monetize putting words in a big name's mouth.
Like, Elon Musk was one of the targets of this, and the amount of damage he's done to his own Tesla stock over the time with some of the stupid stuff he's said on Twitter. Like, you're right, with a little more forethought, like tweeting out something from him or something from Bill Gates, like, "I'm gonna buy this company" or whatever, you could have done quite a bit more gains in the stock market. That said, that is,
and
it might be a little
more
obvious.
To your point about the president, Yeah, to your point about the president, even despite the national election, he said some things that on Twitter that had immediate reactions on the market.
Buy Goya beans.
And people, yeah. And while that could have, like within the hour, you might know it's false, but people that have pre-shorted stocks and cash out during that hour, it only takes milliseconds sometimes to make gains. So if you know what you're doing, there are certainly worse things they could have done, which all leads me to speculate, pure speculation, that these are not necessarily the top threat actors. They might be smart, but this was not a super planned campaign and might be, I may be totally off. It may be that smokescreen thing, but something about it just seems kind of like a defacement in the old days. Just proof of, look how weak these systems you rely on are.
One thing I do want to point out is, like, we're joking that, oh, they just did a Bitcoin scam, but they still made off with over $100,000. And this is an interesting topic when it comes to bug bounties, because Twitter has a bug bounty, but their account takeover bug bounty only pays out $7,700. So it does kind of show where in some cases you, as an attacker, you could get more money by doing something obviously
illegal.
By the
way, I wouldn't, I guess insider is a little weird. This to me is much bigger than an account takeover, because theoretically you had access to all Twitter accounts mm-hmm. when you had access to this tool. So I would presume that a path to God mode tool is much higher than just a single account takeover. Although I haven't looked at if they have any remote root bounties.
Their highest bounty is unrestricted access to data. And it's $12,000.
Wow, that's lower than like when you can do a remote root on an Android phone and get $1,000,000. I'm surprised. makes me feel better that maybe one day we can have bug bounties at a price that won't kill us. But that seemed unrestricted access at only $12,000 seems rather low compared to some of what Microsoft and Apple pay.
Actually, sorry, I just scrolled up a little further. The highest one is remote code execution, which is $20,000. That is their highest bug bounty. So they don't pay out for, I guess this probably would fall under account takeover, because typically like an account takeover flaw, you can still mass use it to take over a bunch of
that's
accounts.
That's a good point. Yeah, yeah.
And that said, though, been
cross-site scripting wormable ones even.
This isn't even a bug, though. It's just basically they had too much access with too little restrictions or control for employee access. And that's difficult to protect against. Like an insider threat is really difficult to protect against while still allowing the access that you need them to have. Like, obviously, Twitter employees need the ability to re-give accounts to individuals if they happen to like lose their phone and forget their password at the same time. They need to be able to reset a MFA token. I'd say Twitter is different. Like Apple, on the other hand, you say you don't want them to be able to because you're storing data, but a social media platform, I think you do want that ability.
So I would say yes, but I think it's still worth talking mitigation factors, because even with trusted internal employees, there are mitigation factors. One is levels of trust. While you certainly ultimately will need someone that has God mode to make really big changes, does every support rep, by the way, we don't know if every support rep at Twitter does. This could be a very privileged person. But assuming that it might not be the case, you should limit the privileges of what even some of your lower employees do. It's not to say you don't trust them, but you only trust them with what their job is for. The other thing, and this happened long ago, I don't know if you remember, when apparently one of the IT administrators, if I remember right, it was either for San Diego or San Francisco, but he basically had the keys to all the government kingdoms as far as IT, and basically they wanted to fire him, so he basically held the city hostage. And he was an administrator. He was the top administrator. So, like, to your point, you have to give the administrator privileges, and that person has to be validated enough to try to make sure you can trust them. So hopefully you vet out the crazies like this one administrator. But you can never perfectly do that. So there's systems where you have, think of like a nuclear facility in the movies. Whenever they take the nuclear football and they're about to push a bomb, they don't trust one colonel or one commander with that. They have two people with keys, and both those people have to do it at the same time. So the point I'm trying to get to is I do think you're right. Insider threats are a whole different game and are much harder and different to guard for. But there are things like some sort of shared administration where, or two key systems where to do certain actions, it's not just one employee that gets to decide, but two have to enter a code.
Or even like
another example is a grocery store, right? When they do certain cash transactions, you've probably seen your checkout person call their manager and the manager has to enter their code. That grocery store person already entered a code into the cash machine for them to have access, but now there's a second code to get to a higher level of access.
And I'm sure there's even like abuse detection behaviors you can look for. Like there's no, I can't think of any legitimate reason a Twitter administrator would need to unlock or take over 30 verified accounts over the course of 5 minutes. So if you start seeing...
And especially with the same content or the same general, even 80% of the text matching would be very suspicious.
Yeah. So I imagine that like these are a lot of things that Twitter is going to be looking at in the future to try and fix this issue and prevent it from happening again. I think it was like, I can't remember which senator it was, but one senator like even sent them a letter in the middle of it saying, what the heck? You realize like the president uses this. What's going on and what are you going to do to fix it? So they're going to catch a lot of heat on this one, I imagine.
Although I got to say, they should catch a little bit of heat, but come on. Twitter should not be an official communication mechanism of any president, regardless of your politics. So really, there's no fault on Twitter on that. There's only a fault on an executive branch that doesn't know how to run secure communications.
Correct. It shouldn't be, but it is. So that is unfortunately where we're at right now. Either way, though,
I still wouldn't blame it on Twitter. The unfortunate, if I were at Twitter and could respond to that senator, I'd be, what idiot in the government decided that Twitter was your communication mechanism?
Yes, exactly. Either way, though, I'm sure by the time this publishes, we'll have a few more details. Keep an eye on our Secplicity page, where we've got a news story that's tracking it that I'm going to keep updated as more details come from Twitter. Like, as for what you could do to protect against this, it's impossible to protect against the insider employee in this case as the user of the service, but it's still a good opportunity for you just to do some basic sanity checks and spring cleaning on your Twitter account, like reset the password. If you're using a password manager, it's easy. It doesn't matter how often you reset it. Make sure you do have MFA set up so that you are protected from either password theft or a rogue employee that can't disable MFA. But for something like this, it's still like, there isn't a whole lot you can do. Just don't fall for the scam.
Even if you had MFA, this would have affected you because it wasn't someone stealing your authentication to Twitter. It was an internal employee using a tool. But like you say, while we didn't know, we definitely just reminded people that you should have MFA turned on and you should be doing things just to avoid the more traditional account hijacks that seem to happen all the time.
Yep. I am still going to be eagerly eating my popcorn and waiting to see exactly what went down here. Because like I said earlier, I cannot imagine that whatever employee or employees fell for this are going to be getting off scot-free if they were paid. So let's move on to our next story now. A little less exciting, but still pretty interesting. This comes out of the UK NCSC, as well as I think the Canadian equivalent and also backed by the NSA from the United States. They just published an advisory last week stating that Russian cyber threat actors are targeting organizations in COVID vaccine development in the US, Canada, and UK. In their advisory, they attributed it to APT-29, aka Cozy Bear, or aka the Dukes. I've not heard them called the Dukes before, have you?
I never heard the Dukes. Obviously, we know Cozy Bear, Fancy Bear, and all the bears quite well.
And I'm slowly starting to memorize which APT number goes with each of them. But in this case, this is
I think Cozy Bear really liked, you know, that was the bed that What's-Her-Name liked the most because it was just right.
Exactly. Yes, the Goldilocks. Does that make the NSA Goldilocks in this?
Exactly.
So this isn't the first time we've talked about nation-state hacking when it comes to COVID research. Like China was accused of it. I think it was Vietnam was accused of trying to fish China as well. It seems to be, honestly, I can't imagine the United States is innocent in this as well. We don't exactly have the best track record. But it seems to be this all-around attack of nation-states going after each other to try and steal information on COVID research.
By the way, I just have to enter insert. It's a slight digression, but you say we don't only have the best track record. On top of that, a lot of people don't realize that Trump just signed a pretty sweeping allowance for the CIA to do pretty much any sort of digital red teaming against other countries they want without any executive approval. So not only do we not have a great track record, but the CIA has been authorized to do this sort of thing.
So if you can't develop a vaccine, just steal it. That's basically what these threat actors are trying to do. The advisory stated that the group is using custom malware known as Wellmess and Wellmail to target organizations globally, and that the malware actually hasn't previously been associated with APT-29 until now. So they said, in recent attacks targeting COVID-19 vaccine research and development, the group conducted basic vulnerability scanning against specific external IP addresses owned by the organizations, and the group then deployed public exploits against the vulnerable services identified. And they listed off a few of them. There was like a Citrix vulnerability we've talked about a couple times, a Pulse Secure one, FortiGate, Zimbra.
Which is Citrix and Pulse Secure, I believe, are definitely VPN related.
Yeah.
I think the FortiGate one might be VPN related too, even though obviously they have network security gear.
And I thought this was interesting. It wasn't some like zero-day burning. It was basically they're just port scanning, vulnerability scanning, and then using unpatched exploits against these organizations. It's pretty basic stuff, especially coming from APT-29, who has done some pretty hardcore hacks, at least over the past few years.
It's really not that surprising. I mean, I think, yes, we usually attribute it to criminal actors, but something like 90 to 95% of attacks are being patched for a long time. When there's so much low-hanging fruit, you don't have to burn your zero day. And I guess if you look at like maybe Apple and Microsoft and Adobe products, software products are patched quickly, but hardware is a little different. If you look at most of those vulnerabilities, they have to do with devices, specifically devices that do VPN. And while the patches are available, let's face it, I don't think even customers of our products apply our latest patches as quickly as we would like. And it's not because we don't want you to. It more has to do with I think it's human nature that if you put a piece of gear in a rack, you don't think about it as much as the software you use every day.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. Even outside the actual exploits, they were found using spear phishing attacks to gain authentication credentials for internet accessible login pages. That is something the APT-29 uses in just about every single, well, them and every other hacking organization.
Every state actor and,
And they also noted that they likely used anonymizing services when using these stolen credentials. I'm assuming that means like VPNs or Tor or something along those lines to try and mask their tracks. Maybe something a little more sophisticated because they are the cozy bears, but who knows. The advisory talked about the Wellmess and the Wellmail tools. They seem kind of interesting, basically just lightweight Trojans designed to execute commands and download or upload files. One thing that did stick out to me is that both of them use hard-coded client and server certificates for their command and control connection, making it really difficult to man in the middle of them without basically reverse engineering the app and plopping in a new certificate. So it could help disguise their communication traffic.
It might be used for an indicator of compromise, at least if you're paying attention to some of the identifiers of the certificate on a network level. If you have any means to parse for that, you could. The advisory shared exactly where the certificate came from, etc.
Yep, and it does also mean that if you're using TLS inspection on your network, which will break these hard-coded pinned certificates, you also break that command and control connection. So yet another reason to use TLS inspection, yay. Either way, though, the advisory basically just stated something that we've seen a few times previously, like in news stories of countries hacking each other to just try and steal intellectual property around the COVID-19 pandemic. This is not going to be the last time we hear this. I am still waiting to see Kaspersky put out an article about the United States getting caught doing it too.
I guess my big question on this is motive. Like, to be honest, this again, I'll start this by saying personal opinion, not the opinion of WatchGuard, blah, blah, blah. But if nation-state threat actors are looking at COVID vaccine pharmaceutical companies doing this just to steal and create this vaccine for their citizens, I've said many times that hacking is hacking and it's bad, but I guess my level of care goes down because honestly, I'm more worried about pharmaceutical companies making it too expensive considering it's a pandemic. But on the flip side, the scary part of this is that really their motive? I mean, we're kind of assuming they're stealing it, But what if they're disrupting? What if they're, you know, while it seems crazy for anyone to want a pandemic to continue, while Russia may not be doing so well, I think China's doing okay. They've had a resurgence, but they seem to have gone through this pandemic well. And if there's a countries that are affected a lot, it's United States and Brazil and a few others that are really still sorting this out. So I could also theorize that it's in some nation states' interest, perhaps, to let this go on longer.
Yeah.
So who knows? I guess it really depends on what is their ultimate motivation. Are they just trying to keep an eye on each other's vaccine so that they can get a leg up when discoveries are made? Or is there something worse? Who knows?
Well, even your something worse, it could just be stealing the vaccine so the United States doesn't get a leg up while you're still shut down because you can't do anything. So it could go either way. Like, that could be the reason they're doing it. It is, yeah, like you said, we're in like really weird times right now. So it's interesting seeing these kind of weird high profile attacks from nation states that are potentially for the good of their own people. It's, I don't know, it's interesting.
Now, honestly, I wish we actually saw the scientific community around the world, including pharmaceutical companies, just globally cooperating on all this data sharing in the first place.
Yeah, but where's the money in that?
Just to do good for the world. That's the problem. When the world is burning, there's someone that's going to be looking for the money. Meanwhile, everyone else is going to burn.
Exactly. So moving on to what Corey thinks, and you know what, I tend to agree, is the at least the more serious or interesting from the industry standpoint.
I think it will have the longer term impact. Let's put it that way. As far as real breaches in the future and real potential for damage, while nothing's happened yet, I think it could have the longer term impact.
Yep. So just last Tuesday was Microsoft Patch Tuesday, which is the second Tuesday of every month when Microsoft releases all of their updates for Windows desktop and server operating systems. Usually there's
as an aside, Adobe shares it to you. So just if you're worried about when to patch, the second Tuesday is good for Adobe and Microsoft.
Yep. Every once in a while, we get like an interesting vulnerability in it. But this last Tuesday was a really serious, critical vulnerability that Microsoft patched as a part of the rollout.
I would say one of the biggest I've seen in my recent memory of at least the past 3 years.
Yeah.
And that's including some, I guess WannaCry was within 3 years, right? I
2016.
I might suggest, nah, maybe not bigger than the Eternal Blue SMB flaw, but pretty damn close.
So this was
perhaps bigger in severity if it's exploited.
Yes. This vulnerability was labeled as a wormable vulnerability in the DNS server functions within Windows Server. It was rated as a 10.0 on the Common Vulnerability Scoring System, which is quite literally as bad as it gets when it comes to a vulnerability in terms of impact and ease of exploitation. And while Microsoft was light on the details at noon last Tuesday, after some people had time to patch, Checkpoint released some of their research and details on the vulnerability. Basically, the flaw involves an integer overflow that enables a heap overflow, which then attackers can exploit to run arbitrary code. And because the DNS server service runs with elevated system-level privileges, typically on a domain controller server, it basically gives the attacker the keys to the kingdom for an internal domain.
And just to make sure people heard the domain controller server, like a lot of people, maybe you don't use Microsoft DNS specifically for your DNS. Maybe you're using Bind or something like that. But the point is, your domain controller, the thing with all of your credentials, including that master domain admin, runs this DNS service by default. It's a, you know, so besides looking for your specific Microsoft DNS servers that might be running this service, this could very well affect your domain controller directly if you haven't taken some extra actions.
Yep. And so the flaw exists in how the DNS server parses responses for specific DNS records, specifically SIG and RRSIG records, which are part of DNSSEC, which is a DNS protection protocol. Basically, they expect a certain size for the response, but the attacker can make the size much larger, which causes the overflows, which causes the code execution. Because it's in the response to a DNS query, basically all the attacker has to do is get that vulnerable server to perform a DNS request for one of these records. And if the attacker controls the malicious domain in this case, they can control the response that is set back down and exploit the vulnerability. And believe it or not, it is pretty easy to make a DNS server make a DNS request. Like if you're on the local LAN, you can just ping through it, do a recursive lookup for this malicious domain, and bam. They even found that in some web browsers, like the non-Chromium version of Edge, so the older one, and Internet Explorer, they can trigger the vulnerability with JavaScript because those browsers don't prevent the web browser from making a TCP connection to a local DNS server on port 53 of the DNS port.
So to translate, if you, one of your local users went to a malicious website with Edge, it could trigger this vulnerability.
Yep.
Assuming they weren't blocking JavaScript.
The good news is that the DNS server executable file, the application itself, is compiled using something called control flow guard, which protects against these types of vulnerabilities. It restricts where an application can execute code, and it monitors different function pointer locations. So it can help protect against an attacker with a overflow taking control of the code. Basically, they need a few more things in the exploit chain to turn this overflow into a code execution vulnerability. Checkpoint didn't make a full exploit chain simply because they didn't have enough time between when it was reported and when they wanted to publish the details, but they did at least identify some exploit primitives, including a info leak that could be used to identify memory addresses, which is one part of this exploit chain. Another flaw, the write what where primitive, basically allowing them to overwrite a specific point on the stack, is another important thing they found. So even though they didn't build the chain entirely, they did say that a motivated attacker could pretty easily do so. And because of that, they've withheld a few of these primitives from the research they disclosed until more people have time to patch. So long story short,
I got to tell you, I'm already seeing GitHubs pop up with so-called proof of concepts. I haven't tested them to see how exploitable they really are. But others are reversing this flaw as we speak.
You mentioned WannaCry, so that exploited those Eternal Blue vulnerabilities that were part of the NSA leaks by the Shadow Brokers back in early 2016. And this vulnerability is right up there with them in terms of impact. It is like once people find the exploit chain, it is highly wormable. If you make it easy to spread across the network, spread across multiple networks, because the DNS server doesn't even need to be exposed publicly. You just need to convince it to resolve one of these records, which makes it really easy to do. And the level of access you
and
get
it's not just the DNS server involved, or the DNS or domain controller involved. It's anybody on your network with network access becomes a kind of attack surface through their browser. So exposed through pretty much anyone in your network potentially. And I would suggest that like the SMB flaws does give you Windows and file share, but with whatever limited privileges you are allowing for Windows file share, this gives you system on a domain controller, which I think, as you already said, is the keys to if I can get the hash for domain admin, that alone could be everything, let alone if I could crack it. Hopefully you're using Kerberos tickets. They too can be copied, but a little harder.
So this is a 16-year-old vulnerability. It affects everything from Windows Server 2003 forward. Microsoft has released patches for everything 2008 and forward. If you're still using 2003 in the year 2020, I think you have bigger issues on your plate right now. But if you're on any other version of Windows Server, patch basically immediately. Make sure you test it and roll it out as quickly as you can. If for some reason you haven't patched already or you can't in a timely manner, there is another mitigation you can do. We'll link to Checkpoint's article in the show notes for this, but there's basically a registry entry you can set where it increases the maximum DNS message size, which is a workaround to prevent that overflow from occurring. You set a registry entry and restart the DNS service and you're good to go. But either way, make sure you patch as quickly as possible because this is a pretty dang serious flaw. And I, like you said, we're already seeing alleged proof of concepts pop up on GitHubs all over the place.
I will say we want you to patch quickly, but we do realize domain controllers are pretty important to productivity. So in this case, I do suggest testing patches. I think this one's pretty safe from all we've seen. And you know, there hasn't been any comments I've seen of this breaking anything. But whenever it's a domain controller or a production server, test them first if you can.
Yep. Either way, though, I will agree with you. This is, at least in long-term impact, the bigger news story. But my mom didn't ask me about this one, so.
No. And your mom may not. But this is the bug that might actually get a nation state actor into someone else's government, and we never hear about it because it's such a sophisticated. This is the one that definitely has a lot of long-term industry impact. Just based on what we know from WannaCry and even some of the past four-year-old Windows RCEs. I mean, didn't we just talk about this with some of the old vulnerabilities that APT29 is exploiting? When you get certain vulnerabilities, especially if people are keep to their patching practices, they can last for years, even if they're totally understood.
Yeah, so patch your dang systems, because it is the easiest way for attackers to get in.
Don't be the laggard.
Don't be a laggard. That's the name of our podcast title today.
I thought it was going to be Twoops.
Twoops. Ah.
Twoops, another Twitter hack.
God, you should feel bad. That's a terrible name.
I think it's horribly funny.
Oy vey. What a good place.
Pleasingly corny.
All right, let's quit before Corey makes more awful puns.
Let me get out my dad joke dictionary.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, you can reach out to us on Twitter. That's funny. I'm at XORRO underscore. Corey is at SecAdept. And the both of us are at hashtag the 443 podcast. Thanks again for listening, and you'll hear from us next week.